Welcome back to The Pit. I'm your host, William Atkinson, here with host John LeMay, and we have a special guest on the show today, Justina Luther. Hello, Justina. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me here today.
And in the show, we forge fiction from fact and folklore. So today's subject material is medical thriller. Justina, do you have anything specific that you want to add to that?
I actually have three different pieces. They have to do with a few of my books. We have a government program, a baby that had a brain bleed, and a real estate...
real estate development?
Broker? Yes, developer, okay. Thank you, for hospitals.
Okay, so government, brain bleed at a baby, and a real estate developer. Today in The Pit, let's begin the descent. Justina, introduce us to those subject materials you've got.
Okay, so the government program has to do with my book, BioLife. The baby with the shunt has to do not only with my own life as I was that infant, but my book, Cherry Sunrises. And the real estate developer for hospitals has to do with my book, A Dancer's Dream.
Okay, excellent. So give us a little synopsis around each one of those three from the perspective of subject material as factual information. And then John has a article he's going to bring, and then I've also got one. And then we'll hit the creative side of this and mesh it all together and see what pops out.
Awesome. Okay, so as far as the government programs go, we all know there's a lot that goes on within our government that we don't know about, good, the bad, the ugly. And, you know, you find out about it 50 years later. So that's where that kind of angle is coming from. The baby with the shunt. I was born 6 weeks premature. When I was 3 days old, it was found that I had a grade 4 bleed in my brain. And the grade 1 being the best, grade 4 being the worst. At 10 days old, I had a shunt implanted. As far as the real estate broker, not real estate, that's why I got messed up. I wrote down broker. Real estate developer. This is my fault for writing down broker. Real estate developer for hospitals. That comes from my book, A Dancer's Dream. And something really fascinating I found out through my research for that book is that a lot of hospitals are actually in rental spaces that they retrofit for the hospital.
Excellent. And John, you brought what?
I don't know how well mine's going to fit with this. We might just throw it out the window. But, you know, I tend to collect the oddest newspaper articles you could ever find. So just because our listeners kind of enjoy little mini history lessons within the show, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, you know, they used to make up newspaper stories sometimes just for entertainment. They most likely were not real. And one of the biggest varieties of those were called snake stories, and they would misspell snake as in, or they would misspell snake as S-N-A-I-K. And that would kind of let the more educated readers know, oh, this is a fake story. Whereas maybe the masses, they might think it was real. So they would like to do stories about snakes. They would do giant snakes. But the weirdest ones they would ever do, and these are most certainly made up, are tales about a person who had a weird stomach problem, and then they would cut the person open in surgery, and they would find a snake in their intestines. They would always say, well, when they were young, they drank from a stream, and there was a baby snake in it, and they swallowed it, and they didn't know it, and it just grew in their stomach this whole time. And again, most likely not a true story. Now, this one I have today, again, we may not use it, may not fit. We might even cut this out and post. Who knows? But just to help us get off the ground, we've got a story from, let's see, it is out of Des Moines, Iowa, from November 18th. And it's 1904. I'm sorry. It's 1904. Yeah, it's called Mystery of Stomach, thought to be sea animal. So these guys really turned up the heat on this idea of swallowing a snake. This article is basically about a girl who maybe swallowed a baby sea monster and it grew in her stomach. So obviously this is not real. I don't think we need to say, oh, unfortunately for so-and-so, I don't think this person even exists. It's just a made-up story passed off as though it's real. But the article, just to kind of sum it up, the remarkable case of Stella Weston, a young girl who died from an operation for the removal of a strange object from her stomach, is thus officially summarized by the attending physician. And basically it goes that this girl was having intense stomach trouble, and so they had to do an operation on her, and, you know, supposedly she died during the operation, and this foreign body that they found in her stomach, you know, sounds definitely like a sea serpent or a sea monster of some sort, just smaller. So the article, to quote from it, description of the foreign body found, weight 2 pounds and 2 ounces, length of shell 12.5 inches, similar to a turtle shell, hair all over, short hair covering major portion of body, hair like a buffalo extending from the snout the entire length of back to tail, specimen examined internally. I think we can cut it off there, but basically the article is implying that this girl ate, quote, the germ of some strange sea monster because she was eating raw oysters. And, you know, it's kind of like, I guess you could say it's like the Ridley Scott Alien movie, but with a sea monster.
I think that could absolutely work.
Okay, good, good. And you don't have to feel pressured on that, because, I mean, honestly, Justina, like, we could use this on another episode if you don't like it.
Well, honestly, when I was listening to that, my brain was going, okay, that falls right in line with like government program, or, and the baby could actually be something to do with, you know.
Okay, cool.
So, I mean.
My head, as you were reading that, was thinking tapeworm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so we could go with the sea monster kind of sci-fi route, or we could stick it with something to deal with tapeworms and parasites and part of the evolutionary process, because we do know that there are birth defects and genetic anomalies that can occur where people can have teeth growing inside their brain or something of that nature because of the way the DNA can get convoluted. So there's a lot that we can do with that and fit all of these together with a government conspiracy for sure. The particular article I have brought to bear comes out of the Washington Times, January 28, 1923, front page, kind of down towards the bottom. And specifically, it's very short, and it is headline, Daughtry is ordered to bed by physician. And here it goes. Attorney General Harry M. Daughtry was ordered to bed yesterday until he overcomes a severe cold and physicians are able to allay symptoms of high blood pressure. So that's, you know, kind of like treatment of symptoms, clearly. But it's interesting that it hit front page. And so I'm thinking this could be one of those situations where you've got a journalist that catches wind of maybe something that's going on and is trying to slowly whistleblow this, which fits over into Justina's idea of government conspiracy. What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's say this guy did catch wind of a government program. What was the first thing that he found, so to speak?
So do we want to go with the journalist as being the hero of the story or heroine?
I think it would be an easily accessible avenue because everybody knows what a journalist is. Whereas if you start talking about specific government agencies and different things like that, not everybody is going to relate to that.
So I'm thinking kind of an Aaron Brock story where you've got Ooh. Somebody who's trying to expose. And so it's really about, you know, the battle over information.
Oh, what if they were going to interview someone from this program, just a run-of-the-mill article, they'd been asked to come and do a promo piece for this company. They get lost on their way to the interview and they see something.
John,
your wheels are maybe they see someone throwing up a snake or something strange.
Or one gets out.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, the construct... Oh, here, real estate developer, that's where we're going to tie this in.
Yes.
They, whoever built this facility, didn't build the facility. What they did is they retrofitted one, and unbeknownst to them, they created the biocontainment facilities and quarantine zones next to the major artery for traffic from the lobby. And you have a situation where there's a containment breach, and then it goes through the classic air duct system or something, but it's literally like on the other side of the wall. So,
ooh, yes.
Poor real estate developer adapting old buildings into new facilities.
Yeah. And that brings to mind, for me at least, H.H. Holmes, which was America's first serial killer, but the way he got away with building his building. Yeah, sorry.
Yes. Keep going.
This is the way my brain rabbits all over the place. But he got away with doing that by, he would bring in some people to work and then he would say he wouldn't pay them and they'd be upset about it. And for instance, one bank was upset that he didn't pay for the big vault that he had bought from them. However, he had already had a room built around it. And he said, all right, you can have your vault back. But if you damage my hotel, I'm going to sue you for everything you have. So, of course, they were forced to drop the issue. So our real estate developer could be handling things in somewhat of that matter, where he kind of one-ups them in a level of suit. So they hesitate to come after him.
That is really interesting that you tied it to H.H. Holmes and the murder house in Chicago, because I had just recently watched a documentary on H.H. Holmes, and what a fascinating, albeit extremely morbid and sad story.
Absolutely.
So, John, your wheels are turning over there.
I was trying to remember, William, when was your article, when did it take place exactly?
1923.
Okay. And so let's make a decision. Are we going to set this in the current day and just kind of use these stories as jumping off points? Like we could, if we're going this weird stomach monster route, you know, we wouldn't have to have it take place in 1904. We could just be like, this is an instance of that happening in 1904. And then I'm kind of like, how are we going to tie in your article from 1923, unless that's another past incident? But basically, when do we want to set this? Like, we'll let you decide, Justina, because I think you have more of the handle on this one. Do you want a modern-day thriller or something in the 1920s, early days? What are you thinking?
I love the idea of setting it back in the past because there was less scientific knowledge, so it was a lot easier to scare people back then.
Okay, cool. Well, let's do 1920s then and tie in with Will's article. And then this 1904 thing is just a past incident of the stomach monster thing.
Okay, so let's hit it in such a way as where your article, John, sets up the prelude,
mm-hmm.
where this is the scientific community or government agencies predating the FDA and medical trials.
Mm-hmm.
Discover these snake monsters.
Yeah.
Which sets then up the prelude to why we now have this facility that's doing the research, mm-hmm. and the government conspiracy cover up that our heroine journalist is attempting to expose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Justina, how do you imagine this figure for the story that's the journalist in exposing what's going on?
I think given the time period and the fact that most journalists were men, I think it would be really interesting to make it a female journalist.
Which then would go into the societal pressures of easily discrediting what this journalist is trying to push. So you can certainly have the commentary then overall throughout this fictional story of underlying morality in terms of viewing people differently simply because of pre-generated stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Another way, tie-in that would be really easy to make with having a female heroine, female lead, would be if, say, she's on her way to this interview and it's actually the cry of a baby that diverts her. This is a medical setting. This is a building where perhaps, or an area of the building perhaps, that the baby should not be. Why is there just a baby crying and nobody is responding? Mm.
That's mysterious, actually. That really sets up a hook to draw the reader further in, especially if that's chapter one. And then the question is, throughout the discovery, you have a brain bleed, or that's what is on the charts or whatever. Maybe the scientists and the medical doctors that are studying all of this don't realize that it's actually the, my head is putting some ideas and thoughts together. What do you think? The infancy stage of these creatures that grow inside the stomach originate in the brain as liquid or a mucus-based life form that permeates down into the rest of the body and then deposits itself down into the abdominal cavities.
Okay, so here is why that is interesting, given the brain bleeds and things that I was talking about in relation to infants. Because what happened with my bleed is the bleed happened and it was actually sticking one of the valves in my head shut so that the spinal fluid and things couldn't get out. And so that could be part of the gestational period for the worms or the whatever these are. And that's why the increase in circumference of the infant's head size and all this kind of stuff as these things are growing. And then the valve opens again and they have access to the rest of the body.
Now, this...
Oh, this took a turn.
This begs a question then. Increased head size fits into a lot of the alien mythos of large cranial cavities, right? Oversized heads and whatnot. So we could tie ancient aliens into this, or, you know, the Greys or something of that nature, if we wanted to really take it into a sci-fi alien twist. Or the other thought is, these medical doctors in the government agencies, are they evil? Or are they really trying to do this and keep public panic down in such a way as to prevent a mass epidemical spread?
Well, I think we have to figure out where the worms came from to begin with, because if it's something that's happening within the baby that nobody introduced, then the government would be on the side of good. If it's something they introduced to an infant who has no way of agreeing to be a part of the study, then they would perhaps be neutral at best. And that's in a very good lighting.
That was going to be my next comment, is we need to establish what our threat or our conflict is. And you totally hit on that. Is this a naturally occurring phenomena outside of humankind, or is humankind doing this? And as such, do we have a human villain, or is just the villain the epidemic by itself?
Okay, so I'm going to tag an article that we're going to talk about next week, John, and our readers might be interested in this. I'm going to just very briefly highlight this. I'll leave a link in the description for the podcast. There are Harvard professors that believe some meteorites that have struck Earth are from an ancient alien civilization, and it's literally a probe. Mm-hmm. So what we could end up here, well, before I go there, the second thing is, if memory serves correctly, there was a bubble or something of interest, geologically speaking, at the bottom of the Black Sea that stirred some controversy a couple of years back as to whether or not it was a sunken alien ship.
I remember that, yeah.
So we could be hitting on a situation where we've got a crashed extrasolar object for whatever reason that has infiltrated the seas or the ocean water. And the first instance coming out of your 1904 article is a swimmer at the beach, and they catch, you know, an egg, and that's where this starts. They go to the hospital. So this would then be not necessarily, if we go down this route, the conflict is maybe not a invasion necessarily, but a natural, well, not natural, but still a phenomenon that has occurred, which is outside of human originating origins.
Is the swimmer perhaps one of the parents of the child?
Yes, why not? Let's go down the familial route and add the emotional ploy to this.
So let's say this man is infected by this. Although it would probably be easier to pass down to the child if it was the mother that was infected. So let's say it's the mother that's infected. She doesn't know about it per se. She goes to the hospital, doesn't feel well, goes about her life, ends up having the child. And something happens during the birthing process, perhaps, that lets the doctors know there is something not completely human about this woman now.
I like it.
So what happens then? Or is that the incident that the reporter witnesses?
Well, if the reporter is brought in to investigate or do an article of this agency or this company, then the research is already taking place.
True.
So the birth would have happened before. And let's say this program that's been researching and trying to figure out what's going on has been now 20 years in the making. So at this stage, I would think that if the instantiating incident occurred in the early 1900s and we're 20 years into the making of this program, it would then make sense to me that the medical doctors that are investigating this incident would be either the father or mother of the child originally. And through the course of this investigation, they are not necessarily evil, but they are of the mind that the ends justifies the means. And so they recognize a bigger threat, and they're up against the question of which is worse, deliberately infecting infants and stealing them from hospitals and using them as unwilling recipients to a medical study. Or the other thing would be the baby of interest that happened in the early 1900s is miraculously cured in some way. I don't know how. Maybe their genetical makeup rejects this parasite. And then they learn or go to medical school, and then they are studying this as the epidemic has already happened. Go ahead.
Another aspect that you could add in, if it is, say, the mother is patient zero, has the baby, the father could be the doctor on the other end of the equation.
Yeah.
So you've got perhaps the mother pulling for the species to continue if she's been fully transformed, so to speak. And then you've got the father on the other side fighting to save his wife and child with the government at his back.
And I've got another thought now, too. So, and I'm trying to take us towards the end game of it because, you know, got to fix the problem. So I'm thinking, okay, there's a doctor who has a cure to this that somebody doesn't want the cure to get out. And maybe it's the guy from Will's article. What was his deal again? He what? Your article?
Well, the historical context there is the guy was just sick, and this was going on during a high-stress environment.
And wasn't he a doctor? Was he a doctor?
He was the attorney general.
Oh, the attorney. Okay.
So the doctor put the attorney general to sleep.
Okay. Well, let's just say there is a doctor or a scientist who has come up with a cure for this, and he died mysteriously, and maybe that's another thing that the reporter is investigating, and she eventually figures out that the doctor who died mysteriously is linked to these weird snake thingies and that he had the cure to it. And then we've got to ask ourselves, why does the government not want the cure to get out there? And see, Will and I both have our tropes. Will likes to go for aliens.
And dystopian universes.
Yeah. I always think aliens are too easy, so I like to, but I'm just as bad because I always go for corrupt billionaires that want to reduce the population. So I'm going to, like, my way of wrapping this up, I would basically rip off Carnosaur, which was a novel from the early 1990s where people are genetically manipulated to give birth to dinosaurs. And it's like dinosaurs are going to return and take over the earth because people have been infected with the dinosaur virus that it was basically a ripoff of Aliens.
Is that by any chance where Michael Crichton got his Jurassic Park?
No, they both kind of came up with it around the same time.
Interesting.
And so Carnosaur was produced around the same time as Jurassic Park in terms of the film adaptation by Roger Corman to rip it off. But it's really a ripoff of Aliens and Jurassic Park because they would have like dinosaurs coming out of people's stomachs. That's why I'm going there. But so, and the plot of Carnosaur was that this corrupt billionaire wants to repopulate the earth with dinosaurs and save the earth by getting rid of humanity and that whole trope. So that's kind of where my mind's going, is some evil entity wants to let this plague of the stomach monsters spread so humanity gets wiped out and just replaced with animals, you know, to save the earth and that whole thing. And so the reporter character is the only one who's smart enough to figure out that this doctor who died had the cure, and so she's got to figure out where he hid the cure or whatever. You know, that's where my mind is going.
So now that we've got an established quasi starting spot, and then the middle is the investigation and leading the audience through the exploration of the what and the why and building the tension, right? The action sequence for the final, I think it should be an action sequence of some type, something big and epic, as opposed to the original idea that I was thinking of, kind of the investigative story of again exposing something through the court system or even through some form of information or misinformation. So the action sequence I'm thinking has got to be against, say, the billionaire. Like, you know, as silly and tropey as it sounds, a direct conflict with this guy. And my thinking is maybe this corrupt billionaire, maybe he's not corrupt, maybe he was good or something got infected and then this thing took over his body. And as a result, now, you know, it's kind of like the Invasion of the Body Snatchers type idea. And it just happens to be the queen. And so if you kill the queen, you kill everything else. So I know that sounds
good. No, that's very good. That's a neat way to do it.
I think it fits with this idea because we're talking about parasitic, you know, organisms.
Yeah, a hive mind.
A hive mind idea. What do you think, Justina?
I like it. And then given the decade that you're in, you could theoretically... Okay, so let's say this is government agency, hive mind, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. So where would the reporter go to find her backup? She would go to the opposite of government, the opposite of the police. So to the mob bosses of the day and things like that. So you end up with a lot of Tommy guns and all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
Oh, that sets up so much 1930s Pulp Fiction in a great universe.
Exactly. I'm getting excited.
Okay.
This is fun.
Oh, that is just awesome. So another thing that's going on at the same time period is going back to the snakes, okay, is... You've got a massive amount of con artists running around in the late 1800s, early 1900s, selling snake oil. And anybody,
oh gosh, cool.
Anybody who's, you know, understanding what's going on here realizes from the medical side, this is really where the Food and Drug Administration gets its start as a means to start regulating both the medical field and all of the doctors and everything who are out there prescribing all sorts of stuff, including mercury for cures, right? Which we now know to be toxic. So my thought is, because that's going on, what you could end up having is your action sequence, however you want to finish that off. And the starting point of the FDA is effectively timing this to the same point. And the way that you get rid of this hive mind is with pesticides.
Ooh, yes.
And so now what you've got is the building blocks of going through the 1950s where they were out spraying DDT. And if you'll go back through some of those old articles, you'll see some of the commercials and stuff. DDT is good for me. And with that being said, that really sets up the whole concept of doing another story kind of based in the same universe of the groundwater and our food system, our food supply being thoroughly corrupted and polluted because corporations are now given license to be spraying all of this pesticide to kill all of these snakes, which or these parasites, which we never fully got rid of. We just figured out how to maintain that population.
I love the idea of taking this super trippy, crazy, out there story and then actually tying it into this mainstream historical what actually happened type of thing in book two, because that is taking your mind and just completely flipping it on end.
You've written a lot of books, Justina, and one of the things that you mentioned on Twitter just the other day was how you kind of make it a goal to trip up your mother because she sees these turn points coming from a mile away.
Oh, that's awesome.
So do you think she would expect book two to be tied back into a what really happened scenario? Or do you think she'd see that coming?
She would be staring at the end page of book one, frowning at it, going, whoa, okay, hold on, give me a minute. And I think because of how out there book one was, going into, for lack of a better term, a more mainstream in book two and tying it into historical events and things would really, really be confusing, because then she's waiting going, okay, wait, so which one of these are you going to take and twist and turn upside down? Something's going to turn upside down. I just don't know which one.
Excellent. So this is a, if this were to be done as a triplet book or a dual book, you know, book one, book two, a second part or type thing, you'd really have to map out and ensure that the story is planned well to where you have all of the leading information as hints to what happens in book two, and book two resolves all of those unanswered questions in a way that's not conflicting with the canon.
Yes.
Okay, so there you go, folks. Justina Luther, author of BioLife. On the next episode, we will be talking a little bit more about that. Justina, why don't you give us a little bit of a prelude and a teaser?
So I'm going to read you the blurb that's on the back of the book for BioLife, and that is, what would you do if you awoke covered in scars with no memory of where they came from? This hypothetical is a reality for me and six other people. Each of us were left for dead in the middle of nowhere with only one thought in mind: get to safety. We have no idea why we all had the same thought or what happened to us, but if it takes my last breath, we will.
That sounds suspenseful.
Thank you.
Now, this classified as a bestseller on Amazon, yes?
Yep, in the medical thriller genre.
Sweet. So, give us your socials.
I am, if you look up Justina Luther or author Justina Luther on any platform, you will find me. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Goodreads, BookBub, probably more places that I have forgotten.
Okay, so you've been listening to Plot Pit. Today, we have been on the phone with Justina Luther, author of BioLife and many others. If you're interested, you can check those out on Amazon. You can look her up on Twitter. And then Twitter also, you can follow us there. You can listen to these episodes on any one of your podcast streaming services or at plotpit.com. And if you are interested in submitting your work or potentially being on the show in the program, send an email to submissions@plotpit.com. In the meantime, on today's journey, William Atkinson here with host
John LeMay
and special guest Justina Luther. Do you have any final comments, Justina?
Thank you so much for having me today. This was an absolute blast.
Excellent. We will certainly have you on for another one of these Pit sessions. All right, folks. You've been listening to Plot Pit.